Obama. Obama is the Messiah, the Lord and Savior.
You can scream and shout with all your might.
Oh, you can scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, and motherfucking moan. You can shove your opinion up your ass that way Obama's cock has something to keep it company.
Either you are wrong or I am right.
Don't forget, the ever-present, the most likely, the third possibility, you are wrong and I am right. And how does that happen? It happens because I have always been right, I will always be right, I am never wrong. Fuck you. Did I hurt your fucking feelings by saying that? Well, fuck you. I can do that because I am the Great One himself. And this is the Stating the Obvious podcast, the weapons platform from which I launched the cruise missile of my intellect that hones in on and destroys stupid motherfuckers all around the fucking world. 10 fucking years, motherfuckers. November 2004 to November 2014. 10 fucking years of podcasting. 10 motherfucking years of mowing down survivors with the machine gun. 10 motherfucking years of bitch slapping stupid people right upside the fucking face and not caring about their motherfucking feelings. 10 fucking years of the amazingness that is the Great One himself. Welcome, my friends. Welcome, my enemies. Stating the Obvious podcast brought to you by the Cynical Libertarian Society. That's CYNLIBSOC.com. On the interwebs, in the control room over there on the other side of the glass, is the lovely and adorable Randy. And I'm going to reposition my mic for a minute. Well, not for a minute. I'm going to reposition it permanently for the fucking duration of this podcast. I was a little off in the recording the previous edition of Stating the Obvious. I did that yesterday. I just didn't feel in the zone. I felt like that episode was a little flat. So for those of you who you listened to it and you thought it was a little flat and I was kind of rambling and off, not really on target, you're right. It was not one of my finer moments, but it's okay. You know, we do what we do, and here at Stating the Obvious, we record shit, it goes out, you take it as it comes, because every day is not necessarily a perfect day, right? We have whoops, we have downs. Today, I'm doing all right, not as tired as I was the other day. I have a martini in my hand. My water bottle is over here, I think it's full. And, so let's talk about girls for a minute. And that was not me talking about girls. That was me taking a giant swig of water. Let's talk about girls for a minute. So, do we remember, for those of you who listen to the cast on a regular basis, remember I was talking about girl B, and then how I ran into her, and I said, put me in your cell phone as Alice and everything. So anyhow, out of the blue today, she did actually text me. And we've been texting back and forth and shit. And, you know, a lot of little flirty shit that chicks do. So anyhow, just throwing that out there. I'll keep you posted on whether or not I bang the cute little redhead or not. As if you really care. Speaking of things to care about, let's talk some more about the Hunger Games. Specifically about Catching Fire. Hold on a second. Randy, my email is popping up. Is this important? Nope. Okay. Sorry, y'all. That was me getting distracted by a squirrel. There's a redhead sending me text, so if she texts me while we're recording the podcast, you may lose me for a minute. What was I talking about? Redheads. What was What was the point? Redheads. Oh, yeah. Catching Fire. So I talked about how throughout the Hunger Games books, the first two, so I just started the third one. I also got a Game of Thrones DVD, and I've been watching that. And you notice how in Game of Thrones, like, all the men are homosexual? And I'll come back to Hunger Games in a minute. Let me do this. Something occurred to me today. You know how the Democrat Party pretends that it cares about black men, but really only cares about getting black men to vote for them, and so is essentially using black men as cannon fodder. It's using black men for their support without actually giving a shit about black men. I get the feeling that the GLBTKKK clan is doing exactly the same thing with homosexual men. Because the GLBTKKK is essentially there for gay women and for trannies and for non-binary people, whatever the fuck that means. You know, and gay men, I think, are allowed to tag along only because they make useful foot soldiers and they boost the numbers. I really feel like the GLBTKKK group despises gay men. And I say this after watching another episode of Game of Thrones, where, like, all the men are gay. There's, like, no chick-on-chick sex going on. But there's all these gay men. And it always seems to be somehow or another portrayed in a negative light. And I'm open to the idea that that's not necessarily true. Because, like, I haven't done an intensive study on every gay sex theme. Every homosexual male sex scene in Game of Thrones. But it just seems like they're always cast in a fairly negative light. And it's also interesting how the sex scenes between men and women are on the downfall, or when they are, you know, it's the two Lannister, it's the Lannister brother and sister fucking each other. Like, that's the only male-on-female sex in the entire Game of Thrones series that anybody has actually enjoyed so far. I mean, the participants. Well, I guess then there's, what's her name, Daenerys Targaryen, and when she was fucking her barbarian dude. I mean, they were enjoying it. So, all right, so it's like the only two where a man and a woman are having sex and enjoying it. Anyway, there's just this plethora of homosexual male sex in Game of Thrones, and there always seems to be something negative hanging over the scene. And that just sort of clicked in my mind and created this thesis. I mean, the thesis about the GLBTKKK, you know, regarding homosexual men as simply cannon fodder, doesn't just come from watching Game of Thrones. It just comes from their behavior overall. And now that I'm thinking about this, as I go forward in the future, I'll be on the lookout for evidence that supports or disproves this thesis. But it's just a thesis. I'm throwing it out there as something that came to my mind and seems to make sense. In the Hunger Games, again, as I talked about, Katniss essentially does not do anything. She's very seldom a prime mover. She goes through the books the same way women go through their lives, sitting around waiting for other people to do things for them. Right? Women want equality in the workplace because they you know, and let's just pretend for the moment that women don't have equality. We all know that women, in fact, have superiority because we live in a country by the women, for the women, of the women, where everything in our fucking society is geared towards women, geared towards making women feel safe, geared towards not hurting women's feelings, geared towards giving women shit for free, right? So, but let's pretend none of that is true. Let's pretend that, you know, there no. Let's pretend that people are really concerned about the fact that 50% of the prisoners in prisons aren't women. Let's pretend that women are actually interested in actual equality. Let's pretend that women really are oppressed. Right, so women want equality in the workplace, but instead of doing something to get equality in the workplace, they want to sit around and wait for rich white men in Washington, D.C. to pass laws giving this to them. Right, women want to not be raped by men, but instead of women who have children teaching their men not to rape, and women who are public school teachers teaching children about the non-aggression principle, and instead of women not going to colleges where they themselves claim 1 in 5 women get raped, and instead of women learning self-defense, and instead of women, you know, doing anything at all to reduce the chances of them getting raped, women instead expect the world around them to alter, to change, to reform itself by some magical process, usually involving the government, right, where the government passes a law and suddenly things stop, right? I've talked about this before. I mean, rape is already against the law. If you could prevent rape by passing laws, there would be no rape because rape is already against the law, right? If you could prevent rapes by having police officers, there'd be no rapes. There are already police officers. But of course, the entire idea of trying something different is completely anathema to the femistatist. So anyhow, Katniss goes through Hunger Games in much the same mode. She's just waiting for things to happen around her, waiting for other people to do stuff. And I found it interesting that at the end of Catching Fire, this is a spoiler if you haven't read the book, when, after she's been removed, and I saw all of this coming, that the guy who was the game master this year was one of the rebels, and this, I saw all of that coming. Anyway, ow. When she wakes up on the hovercraft and she thinks that she's back at the Capitol and they're going to torture her or whatever, I found it utterly typical of female logic, and I know that's an oxymoron, that she set off to kill Peter, whatever the fuck his name is. Why can't it... God. Peter, whatever the fuck his name is. I know it sounds like Peter. It's like I can't say it. My mouth doesn't make that word because it's a stupid name. That's why. Katniss picks up a syringe and goes off to find Peter and kill him so that the Capitol cannot torture him. This is woman logic. Throughout the entire previous book, and throughout all of Catching Fire up to that point, this girl, not one hand. Fuck, I cannot fucking talk. Obviously, I need more of a martini. Through all of the book, and through all of the previous book, this is a woman who was not willing to lift a finger to overthrow the Capitol. However, she is willing to kill somebody she claims she cares about so the Capitol cannot torture that person. And I read this and I thought, there, my friends, is woman logic. Because that's exactly how a woman would think. If somebody was coming like to a woman's house and was going to, say, kill her child, a woman would kill her own child to prevent the child from being killed instead of killing the people who were going to harm the child. That is woman logic. This is why women should not vote. This is why women should not have power. This is why women should not make decisions. Because that is woman logic. She'll happily allow the Capitol to exist, to murder people, to enslave people, all this other stuff, because who would build the roads? Not lift a finger to fucking overthrow the Capitol. But when the Capitol is going to kill, or she thinks the Capitol might kill or torture Peter, she's going to go and kill him so that the Capitol can't do it. It's hilarious. It would be more hilarious if it were not an exact representation of woman logic. I'm telling you. And you see this too, because we're about to pick up, I'm going to pick up reading this article about these two stupid college whores who are trying to prevent women from being raped by passing laws. I just forgot what I was going to say. I hate when that happens. Randy, what was I going to say? Read my mind. Mm-hmm. I was talking, what the fuck was I going to say? Alright, it doesn't matter, it'll come to me. It's a good thing I'm a professional, right? I've been doing this for 10 years, can't you tell? 10 fucking years. Oh my god. So this is Annie E. Clark and Andrea Pino. And picking up this article from, what is it, Vogue magazine. So anyhow, these two bimbos, they decided to file a Title IX complaint and blah, 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 because for those of you, go listen to the previous edition of Stating the Obvious to find out what all has come before. I'm not going to go back and explain it. This isn't the Hunger Games book, so I started listening to the third book, and there's this pathetic excuse for Katniss to, in her mind, recount everything that happened before. You know, just for the people who are reading the third book in the trilogy without reading the first two, you have to do this summary of everything that came before. I'm just like, Jesus fucking Christ. Again, it's written, it's like, if you want to read the third book, read the first two first. Why do I have to suffer through this unnecessary exposition? Oh yeah, because this book is written, aimed primarily at young girls who just are kind of dumb for the most part. Not that young boys aren't dumb either. Oh, they are. Most of you young people out there are dumb, so get the fuck off my lawn. Okay, we're 19 minutes into the podcast. I can start talking about what the podcast is about now. Oh yeah, 10 years of Stating the Obvious. I think I was going to say something about 10 years of Stating the Obvious. I don't know what I was going to say. Doesn't matter. So anyhow, they did some stuff and they fucking got some lawyers and then they finally... Or did they get lawyers? Doesn't matter. They finally filed their Title X lawsuit. Is it a lawsuit? No, their Title X complaint. They filed a complaint. Again, this is, for women, this is a great accomplishment. These two girls together managed to file a Title IX complaint. Right? Men climb Mount Everest, go to the bottom of the ocean, have sex with 3 women in one day, go to the moon, paint the Mona Lisa, invent the helicopter. That's what men do in order to achieve greatness. Women achieve greatness by filing complaints, by writing their complaint on a piece of paper and giving it to a rich white man in the government. To a woman, that's an accomplishment, because it says here that to celebrate this filing, they both got dime size IX, Roman numeral IX, tattoos on their ankles. They got tattoos of the Roman numeral 9 on their ankle in order to celebrate writing their complaints on a piece of paper and giving the piece of paper to rich white men. That is the most pathetic fucking thing ever. And women are like, we should be paid the same amount of money as men. We're equal. No, men do not get tattoos because they wrote some shit on a piece of paper. That is not something to celebrate. The fact that the only thing you can do to prevent women from being raped is write your complaints on a piece of paper and give it to a white man is a testimony to how fucking powerless, to how stupid, to how enslaved you actually are. Both say they received death threats on Twitter along with threatening phone calls. They say they did, but if you received a death threat on Twitter, there would be a record of it. Twitter is public. I suspect they didn't, because if they actually did, they wouldn't need to say they received these death threats. They would have evidence of them. And of course, along with threatening phone calls, again, people can trace phone calls today can all be traced. If somebody's really calling you and threatening you to kill you, then go to the police and have the call traced and do something about it, because the police are there to protect and serve, right? I mean, the police, why, they're here to protect people. So if you're really getting death threats, why aren't the police protecting you? Unless, of course, you're willing to admit that the police don't exist to protect citizens. That the police exist to protect the corporations and the government from the citizens. Somebody broke into Pino's dorm on campus, leaving behind a fake bloody knife just outside her room. Okay, fingerprint it. Doesn't the dorm have cameras? I bet it does. They have had their share of successes. EROC put Anna, the subject of a lengthy front piece article in the New York Times, in touch with a reporter who wrote a piece. A group of women they worked with at the University of Connecticut received a $1.3 million settlement from the university. So this is, and it says here, UNC, their own alma mater, has instituted a host of significant reforms. I don't know what a significant reform is, but again, it just means writing shit on paper. Significant reforms. But so that's the three examples of their success that are given. So the University of North Carolina implemented some significant reforms. They had a newspaper article written about them. And a group of women they worked with in Connecticut got a $1.3 million settlement from the university. So in other words, this is all they've done to actually prevent any rapes from happening. And these chicks who got this $1.3 million, let's keep in mind that the $1.3 million given to these chicks who Well, it says a group of women. It does. We can only assume that this group of women was, in theory, some group of women who claims they were raped. But this $1.3 million did not come from, nor in any way inconvenience, the men who raped these women. It merely inconvenienced the taxpayers and the students at the university, because all the money a university has comes from the taxpayers or the students. Again, there's this whole bizarre dichotomy in, I don't know if dichotomy is the right word. There's this whole bizarre situation in our society where we want victims to be rewarded, but we dare not punish the people who actually perpetrated the crime. I mean, if a woman gets raped, you don't make the university give her $1.3 million. You find the rapist and you do something about the rapist. You make the rapist be her personal slave, or you make the rapist pay her the money. You do something to the person who actually violated the non-aggression principle and violated another person's property rights. But that's exactly, in our society, what we don't do. This is what I've talked about before, about how the police and the criminal justice system exist not to prevent crime, but to protect the criminals from any repercussions from their crime. Because the state, the police industrial complex, the prison industrial complex, the justice industrial complex, all of those entities want crime to happen, because crime is what keeps them in business. Victims are what keep them in business. Without criminals and without victims, the state loses much of its power. The police lose much of their power. The justice system loses most of its power. The prison industrial complex loses its power. This is all just pure fucking nonsense. So then, of course, let me continue. Let me read this long paragraph here, then we'll go back, and this is going to wrap this up. We'll move on to the next thing. Of course, being a successful activist does not necessarily translate into material success. When I caught up with Pino and Clark at the beginning of this summer, they had just traveled cross-country by car, speaking with victims along the way and looking for a place to live in Los Angeles. Quote, "We're basically homeless," unquote, Pino admitted cheerfully, while Clark lamented the imprecocious life, I can't say that word, of an activist. Open quote. Well, open quote, it's like I'm dictating to the fucking dictation software. When you're using dictation software, that's what you say. Open quote. Quote, "We'll be interviewed on Good Morning America and have meetings at the White House, and the whole time we're wearing clothes from Goodwill." Close quote. Well, yes, as people like myself and Aaron Clary have said, being an activist is not a way that you can make money. Right? Being an act. The reason these girls cannot make money being activist is because nobody wants to pay money for that. Nobody wants to pay money for two little white girls wearing too much makeup to write their complaints on a piece of paper and give that piece of paper to rich white men. Nobody is willing to pay for that, because that's not creating value for anyone else. Now, they could get paid if they were, for example, teaching a self-defense class to women, so that women, when men tried to rape them, could defend themselves. They could make money doing that, because that's something people would be willing to pay money for. They could make money by creating a business where if you're a woman and you get raped, you could get a rape kit and you could have DNA testing done. You could have, what's the word I'm looking for? Not judges, but arbitrators. You could have arbitrators to arbitrate rape accusation cases, things like that. Things like that people would pay money for. You could make money doing that. Being an activist, just walking around talking to victims and going on Good Morning America, no, you can't make money doing that, because nobody wants that, because you're not creating value for anyone. none of that is going to prevent women from getting raped. There are other tolls. Having to repeat the story of an assault over and over, sometimes under the glare of television lights, can be traumatic. To protect herself, Pino relates the incident matter-of-factly, almost as if it happened to someone else, a defense mechanism that can frustrate journalists looking for the sensational. Quote, "Aren't you going to cry?" close quote, a TV producer once asked. Quote, "Did the blood spatter or pour? Did the blood spatter or pour?" unquote. Another queried Pino as Pino described her attack. So these two bimbos, you know, are talking to reporters, telling them about how they were raped, and the reporters are asking them things like, "Aren't you going to cry?" or "Did the blood spatter or pour?" Now the reporters are asking these girls who were raped those questions. The reporters are asking those questions to women who say they were raped. I say that they say they were raped because I wasn't there. I have no firsthand knowledge they were raped or that they weren't raped. These are accusations, right? There's been, now, as far as I know from this article, neither of these girls took her accuser into a courtroom. There's been no evidence, no rape kit, no DNA testing, no film footage, no convictions, nothing. They claim they were raped. These are stories they're telling. There's no factual basis that I am aware of for either of these stories. Not saying they're lies, I'm not saying they're true. I'm saying I personally have no evidence one way or the other. These women who have been raped, say they were raped, claim they were raped, tell these rape stories, are asked by reporters questions like, "Aren't you going to cry?" or "Did the blood spatter or pour?" Now you're saying, "But great one, why are you making a big deal out of this? Shut the fuck up and let me do this. I've been doing this for 10 fucking years. Here's why I'm making a big deal out of this. These reporters who are asking these questions, these reporters who are looking for sensationalism, are these reporters members of the media? Isn't this the Fourth Estate? These reporters, didn't they go to college? Don't they have college diplomas? Didn't they major in journalism? Isn't that a liberal arts degree? These reporters, did they go to public school for 12 years? These reporters, I wonder if they were raised by women. So the point of this is that these reporters are jackasses. Yes, they're jackasses who were raised by women, who had 12 years of public education controlled by women, who went to college for journalism. And they're insensitive jackass motherfuckers. They're almost as crass as I am. Wow, women are doing a great job raising their children. Public education is fantastic. And those people getting those journalism degrees, they are obviously very intelligent, sensitive people. We should trust them as sources of information. I mean, this sort of shit just verifies everything I'm telling you when I stand here on this podcast and tell you that women are failures as parents, especially the women today, the single mothers. Their children are going to be the most fucked up people to ever walk the planet Earth. The public schools, I mean, fuck, somebody comes in front of you and says to you, "I was raped." I mean, God, you know, even I, this may be hard for you to believe, even I am not such a cocksucker that if a woman was telling me the story of how she was raped, I would not say some shit like, "Well, aren't you going to cry?" I mean, don't get me, I might call into question her facts. I might interrogate her in the sense of validating whether or not she's right or wrong. But to say shit like, are you going to cry? And this, you know, this is the liberal fucking elite of the media. This is the people that you stupid fucking cocksuckers out there think are telling you the truth and you have their fucking liberal arts degrees from colleges. This is the kind of people that make up the media. She being Pino, she wants to go to law school. Yeah, that'll be useful. But after her tumultuous undergraduate career, her GPA isn't what it should be. Who cares? Clark, for her part, has always wanted to run for public office, but wonders how her advocacy work will play. Quote, I don't want to be the rape girl my whole life. I have a college degree and a teacher's license, but when you Google my name, that's all that comes up. Close quote. Right, so here we have these two bimbos with low GPAs because they're running around giving speeches about how you tie your nine and rape. So one of them wants to be a lawyer, which is the fucking scum of the earth, and the other one wants to go into politics. That tells you everything you need to know about these girls. Normal people do not want to be lawyers or politicians. Normal people look for opportunities to create actual real value for other humans and not be parasitic scumbags, which is what virtually every lawyer and all politicians are. Parasitic scumbags. Quote, I think these women are amazing, but it makes me angry that they have to put their lives on hold to fix this problem. Close quote, says Professor Dauber, whoever the fuck Professor Dauber is. Well, no, you see, sometimes if you want to actually, if you want to make an important change in the world, if you have to want to, and this again, this is female thinking. Women think they can have everything they want. If you want to make an important change in the world, and these girls aren't, there's this other quote right here. This quote says, this is from somebody named Senator Gillibrand. And the quote is, the work they have done will change the world. What is more important than that? Unquote. It's not going to change the world because not one fewer woman is going to be raped because of these dumb whores. This is woman logic. First of all, these women think they're doing something really important. But at the same time, it never occurs to them that they might have to put their life on hold. And again, men inherently recognize this. Men recognize that if you want to achieve greatness, you have to give some things up in order to do some other things. Right? For example, if you want to have 10 years of stating the obvious behind you. If you want a podcast for 10 years talking about political philosophy, there are times when you have to come home on a Sunday after having worked all fucking day and you're tired, and instead of going to the bar where the cute little bartender works that you have a crush on, you have to fucking call up your fucking audio engineer and make a martini and go to the motherfucking studio and record your goddamn podcast. You have to give some shit up. You have to fucking give up some shit in order to achieve greatness. You have to put some of your life on hold to achieve greatness. Right now, right motherfucking now, I could be in my living room watching another episode of Game of Thrones, you know, playing with my dick. But I'm not. I'm here. I am sacrificing that to be here recording this motherfucking podcast. So I'm sorry that you're fucking angered that they have to actually put some effort into doing things But yes, if you want to do something, if you want to accomplish something, if you want to achieve greatness, if you want to change the world around you, not that these women are doing any of those things, they're just fucking losers. But if you do want to achieve greatness, like I have with 10 fucking years of stating the obvious, if you want to achieve greatness, you have to give something up. Look at Michael Dean. He's talked about this before. I mean, he's got more and more radio stations coming in. Last time I listened, I think he was up to 30 stations or something. He's doing Freedom Fiends all the time. He has given up a lot of things. He remarked one time that he pretty much doesn't do what used to be his day job anymore because he doesn't have time. Right? He hardly ever leaves his house. He's at home all the time, which he didn't do that before. But he's put hours and hours and hours and hours and hours into Freedom Fiends, into doing the websites, into doing Creamy Radio Audio, into doing Anarchy Gumbo, into working with Ben Stone, and all sorts of stuff. He has sacrificed many things, and he is on a path to greatness. I mean, he's got a fucking anarcho-capitalist radio show on radio stations here in the fucking People's Republic of the United States. The United Soviet Socialist States of America. I mean, who would have ever thought you could get an anarcho-capitalist talk show on radio stations in the Soviet States of America? Well, apparently Michael thought he could, and he did, because he has made sacrifices for greatness. Here's another article. This is from Elle magazine. It's called Where the Boys Are, and it's an article lamenting the dating scene and how boys all suck and how women can't find any men because all the men are all undateable. And I've just got a couple of paragraphs in here. By a couple, I mean four, that I want to read to you and comment upon. Here's the first one. Actually, I'm going to read more than I intended to read. Here we go. Let me do this. Never mind that most of the single women I know would rather become a spinster stereotype with 24 cats than marry an old-fashioned drill sergeant. Plus, I'm going to do running commentary. Okay, so first of all, yes, so it must be true because it's most of the single women you know. But also the fact that they would rather be spinsters with 24 cats than marry an actual man. I mean, an old-fashioned drill sergeant? You can't get more manly than that. All right. Plus, the notion of... And so in this article, they're talking about, you know, should people leave the city they're in to go to some other city that supposedly has more men or has more women, whatever you're looking for, yada, yada. And they're throwing around some stuff about all that. And I'm drinking my martini, and it's really good. Okay, continue reading. Plus, the notion of moving or jetting across the country to find a husband seems terribly out of step with our times. Again, because women don't think they should have to actually go out and look for husband material. They think they should just sit at home and this perfect man should come to them. Again, women are objects, not agents, right? They should not have to go look for a man for them to marry. And I don't know why they want to get married anyway, because of course all men are stupid and all men are evil and all the other shit that they're taught by the feminazis. But, well, no, I mean, if it's really true, if there aren't any men where you live and you want a husband, then I guess you'd better go someplace where you can find some husband material. But again, the women expect everything to be handed to them, and then they don't understand why people like myself refuse to regard them as being my equal. The median age of first marriage has been rising in the United States for more than 5 decades. It's currently 26.5 for women and 28.7 for men, and many are skipping out on the institution altogether. The percentage of adults in the U.S. who are married has declined 22% since 1960, but it is precisely in times of change like this that dread about single women arises, argues Rebecca Traister, author of a book about single women to be published in 2015 by Simon & Schuster. Quote, the fact of men and women not marrying at the start of adulthood makes social conservatives panic, Traister says. The federal government's failure to provide for parental leave, support daycare, or address the pay gap between the sexes sends the message that the nuclear family with the woman as caretaker, man as breadwinner, is still ideal. She says, however divorced from reality the model is. Much about single ladies is threatening to many men. Quote, the idea of their unmoored sexuality, that they could reproduce on their own, that they could earn on their own, unquote, Traister goes on. All of it raises the specter of a world in which women simply don't need men. That right there is the biggest chunk of femistatist propaganda bullshit ever. First, of course, we see the feminist wet dream, the feminist fantasy, that men are afraid of women. Femistatists so desperately want men to be afraid of women. As I have said before, for those of you out there who are cunts, no man is afraid of you. We just don't like you. As for this idea that, and Aaron Clary did a video about this. If I think about it, I'll link to it in the show notes. You know, this idea that men are afraid of women who make money? You should try talking to a man. I don't know any man who is afraid of women who make a lot of money. This is pure nonsense. I'd love to find a woman who makes a lot of money because she can make the fucking money and spend it on me. There is not a fucking man out there who is afraid of a woman who makes a lot of money. And this shit is actually, you know, the idea of their unmoored, no, nobody's afraid of your unmoored sexuality. I mean, we want women to have a lot of sex because then we can fuck you. Now, are we men, for the most part, going to marry women who, you know, fuck three different guys every single month? No. I mean, we'll fuck you, but we don't want to marry you. But we're not afraid of you. We just recognize that you're not marryable material. Okay, you're not relationship material. You're not long-term material. You are mentally damaged. You're broken. You're used. You're damaged. It has nothing to do with being afraid of you. It's just like, If there's a lawnmower running, I'm not going to stick my arm in the spinning lawnmower blade. It's not because I'm afraid of the lawnmower. It's because I'm not stupid. It's because I recognize that if I stick my arm in there, my arm is going to be destroyed, and I really like my arm. Okay? Men are not afraid of women who fuck lots and lots of men. Men look at those women and recognize the damage those women will do to their lives and stay the fuck away. That's not fear, that's self-preservation. That's a dislike of drama. Then, of course, the idea that the idea of their unmoored sexuality, the idea they could reproduce on their own. I'm pretty fucking sure women cannot reproduce on their own. Now, we know this isn't true because every woman who's ever gotten pregnant, it was always a man that did it to her. No woman has ever gotten pregnant without a man being involved in one way or another. The sperm has to come from somewhere. So this thing that women can reproduce on their own? I mean, this fucking stupid cunt, Traister, Rebecca Traister, she doesn't even have a basic knowledge of biology. Humans are not asexual. You have to have a sperm cell and an egg cell to reproduce. Women cannot reproduce on their own, you dumb fucking femistatist cunt. Now let's look at the fucking statism in the femistatism. The federal government's failure to provide for parental leave, support daycare, or address the pay gap sends the message that the nuclear family is still ideal. Well, no. The nuclear family is still ideal, I mean, to a certain point. As I've argued before, group marriage or group families is actually better, but God forbid, the fucking, we can't have any of that. Even the most biggest fucking GLBT KKKer out there who wants men and men and women to get married is still terrified of the idea of three or more people being married. You know, this idea that the government is supposed to provide for parental leave and daycare and force people to pay, also that women can live without men. No, if women want to live without men, then don't have children and don't spend so much money on bullshit. I'm sorry, but here's a fucking reality. Raising children takes a lot of time, effort, and money. And having two people to raise children is more effective and more efficient than one. I mean, God damn it. I mean, this is just fucking not rocket science, people. If you have a child and you're a single mother and you're going to go to work, what are you going to, you know, and this is, of course, what these fucking femistatists want. They want the children put in daycare because in daycare they can get their minds fucked up. They want the children in public school because in public school they can get their minds fucked up. Then they can go to college and major in liberal arts and get a degree in journalism and then ask a woman who was raped, well, aren't you going to cry? Right? That's what the femistatists want. The femistatists want children to be fucked up. But the statistics, you can find these. Go to Google, type in statistics, single mothers, yada yada. The children of single mothers are more likely to commit suicide, more likely to be criminals, more likely to have depression, so forth, so forth, so forth. So not just single mothers, single parents, period. This is why the femistatists want more single parents, especially single mothers, because it enforces the need for statism and it creates children who are more and more fucked up than ever before, which again increases the need for statism. It's a cycle. The more fucked up the people are, the more the people need the state to provide for them, and the more fucked up their children are, which means more statism. And I'm always right. I've been right for 10 motherfucking years. Suck my motherfucking cock. All right. I wish I had some chocolate.